Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
I'm Ann Northrup.
What a week. In the wake of the police murder of George Floyd, a week of Black Lives Matter protests nationwide, and the federal government turning on its own people, we will speak with DeRay McKesson, educator, civil rights activist, one of the leading voices in Black Lives Matter, and the author of On the Other Side of Freedom, The Case for Hope.
We'll also talk about a couple of other Black LGBT people murdered by police and others in the last week or so. Black trans man Tony McCade, killed by police in Tallahassee, Florida. Black gay man McKinsley Lakeith Lincoln, shot dead in Louisiana.
We also mourn the loss of Ron Simmons, one of the nation's leading African-American AIDS activists and service providers.
We have a little good news from a federal court for gay surviving spouses.
France elected its first transgender mayor, and the United Kingdom, its first who is openly HIV positive.
And we will talk about the memorial service held for Larry Kramer at the New York City AIDS Memorial in Greenwich Village last week. But we start with our guest, DeRay McKesson, a Black gay man, leading activist in the Black Lives Matter and related movements over the last few years. DeRay, you spent more than a year in Ferguson, Missouri, working on that case, Michael Brown being murdered by police. As you look at what's going on now, what are you seeing and what are you feeling?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, I'm seeing a lot of what I saw last time. I'm seeing people offer platitudes and not plans. I'm seeing political leaders talk about all the things everybody else can do and none of the things that they can do. So what we know is that the police have actually killed more people since the protests, not less, that a third of all the people killed by strangers in the United States is actually killed by a police officer. And that's just untenable, which is why there's so much unrest in the streets.
And I have to say that I'm particularly struck by the urgent marshaling of the entire armed forces, police departments, and everything else to deal with protesters. And yet we are still just barely on the verge of charging those officers in Minnesota, and you know, none of the officers in years gone by who have murdered people.
Yeah, you know, and it's one of those things where when we were in the street in 2014, people were like, y'all are being dramatic, that the police don't really do these things, you're being dramatic. And what is important about this moment is that everybody's seeing it again in real time. It's not just St. Louis. It's not just D.C. It's not just New York. It's all over the country. We're seeing the police tear gas and shoot rubber bullets at reporters. We're seeing the police in Atlanta like bust open car doors and drag people out. Like, you actually get to see this in real time. So it's not, oh, activist DeRay who is frustrated with the police had a bad interaction. This is everybody. You know, this is actually the way that they behave. And I'm actually, there's a part of me that is happy that people are able to see it so clearly, like we saw it so clearly in 2014.
So is this the confluence of phones being immediately available to show this stuff, the current intense panic over the coronavirus, and the horror of the administration of Donald Trump? Are these factors coming together to bring us to this point?
Yeah, and COVID, right? What does it mean when everybody's home, record unemployment? So, you know, one of the ways the protests might sort of fizzle out is people got to go back to work. But there's a lot of people that don't have to go back to work, right? Because the federal government didn't even prioritize unemployment, didn't prioritize a host of things. So it's like, and no business are open. It's not like you can, oh, leave and then go to the party or go to, like, nothing's open, right? So it's just, it really is a perfect storm in a way that is forcing these issues about race and justice to come to the fore.
Yes, they're ready to, send out the U.S. Army, because of some people robbing some stores, whereas we just had the federal legislation that basically passed all the wealth onto the corporations and left us holding, $1,200 if we were lucky.
Yeah, so I think that there's frustration about all of that. I think that that all boils over into the street, and that's real, you know? Like, it is, people are frustrated. The last time I was outside, it was a lot of young people, much younger than were out, 4 or 5 years ago. And that's actually really beautiful. It's beautiful to see people realize that, like, or have that moment of ownership that, that like the country has to be better, that they don't want to grow up in a country that looks like this right now. And that the only way it'll be better is if we fight for it.
And it is exciting to see that and to see how widespread the anger is and how determined people are to make things different and to see it across a lot of boundaries. It's all right. I know. I've already seen you twice on MSNBC today.
I am like, I went to see you at 5 a.m. I wake up at 7. I am like, I'm burning it at both ends. You're about to hear my, I haven't eaten today, and it's early, so I like put the, I preheated the oven so I could heat up this thing.
Yeah.
I had to like, I had to take it out of the oven, so you might get a little beep go off because it'll burn the apartment down.
Eat something, take a nap. But I see people operating across a lot of communities, and I'm excited by that. But I also, I'm a lot older than you, and I am a little scared of this energy dissipating and of the hammer coming down from people in power to stop this. And they tend not to back off. They tend to keep at it until they've hammered us down.
Yeah, I think that we, you know, in 2014, I'll never forget Brené Brown, the amazing thinker and an academic. She said to me, she was like, DeRay, you got to figure out how to build a critical mass, right?
Yes.
And what's sort of powerful about this moment is that, that's the timer for the thing. I need to turn it off. Just need to turn it off so I don't burn down the...
Hey, it's an informal show. Don't worry.
Here we go. Okay. Don't want to burn down the house. I'm back. Okay. So she
put up a shot at your book.
Right. She was like, you need to figure out how to build a critical mass. And we changed the conversation about race and justice in the country in 2014. We did, and that was really beautiful. This moment is a little different because I see people who never posted about race, never posted about justice, never posted about the police. Like, they're doing it now, and I think that we actually are reaching the critical mass. The test of this moment is, can we organize, right?
Yes.
We point people to a direction that will lead to substantive systemic change for the future. Like, that's really the test of this moment. And I'm really hopeful, you know, like I am. I like believe that this is possible. I believe that we'll be able to figure out how to organize. I believe that people are hungry for like something to do, and we are trying to offer that for people.
Do you, do you see any critical mass assembling around real structural change in the way we're governed in this country? Because, you know, we keep trying to put a square peg in a round hole. We've got a racist Senate. We've got a racist electoral college. If we don't change those things, how are we going to really change the power structure and get the things that the majority of the people want in this country?
Yeah, so remember, we think about these problems as present, not permanent, right? Hunger is present, not permanent. Poverty is present, not permanent. All of these, police violence are present, not permanent. So we are, the hard part about what our work is that we are always telling a story about a world that we know is possible, but we've never seen before, right? So I'm telling a story about a world where every kid has breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I've not lived in that world. I'm telling a story about a world where the police don't kill people. I'm telling a story about a world where we think about safety beyond policing. I've not lived in those worlds, but I know they are possible. So when I think about this idea of like, how do we point people to the structure? Part of it is like reframing the question for people. So, you know, people ask me all the time, they're like, are you saying that the police should never kill somebody? And I ask them, when should the police kill your child?
Right? Yeah.
Like, when is it okay for a police officer to put a bullet through your child's head? And they're like, I don't know. It's like, well, if you don't know, then I don't know either, right? Like, we're trying to, like, reframe this conversation for people so that they enter in a different way and they leave in a different way. The second is that we actually just know more about the police and the systems than we ever knew before. And that's actually really powerful. We know about the police union contracts. We just know more than we ever knew. And I am always sort of encouraged about how we can use data to convince people who probably were unconvinced before. And the third thing that keeps me hopeful is... you know, people are paying attention differently this time. In 2014, people were learning. It was like a real learning moment. People were like, everybody was like, I don't understand. Da, da, da. Now people learn, they are ready to do something. And like, how do we put them in a position to do something is the task of the organizers.
Do you see folks coalescing around any particular immediate goal? I mean, I see headlines about defund police. What do you see emerging as, like, if the government was going to respond and do something that might show that, yeah, we're serious about change, what would it be?
So we are actually, we just put out a platform called 8 Can't Wait. So what we know that we didn't know before is that there are these 8 policies that are in use of force, the use of force policies, that when they are combined, at least for 72% reduction in police violence. They are simple, but not small. And simple in the sense that it's things like banning chokeholds and strangleholds. It's things like making sure that we exhaust all other means, that the police have to exhaust all other means before they use any deadly force. Making sure that they have to report when they wave their gun at somebody, or when they point their gun at somebody. Making sure they can't shoot into moving vehicles. Right? These are simple solutions, but the impact is not small. These are huge in terms of impact. So that actually is a coalescing right now. That's trending on Twitter. 8 Can't Wait. We're trying to create a critical mass right now where police departments and mayors enact these policies. And that is really an immediate thing that can happen. It's one of many things that can happen. And that's where we're putting our energy to begin.
How does your experience as a Black gay man play into this and the work you're doing?
Yeah, you know, so I am sensitive to the power of community. I'm sensitive to what it means to be from a marginalized community within a marginalized community. It has made me more empathetic and helped me understand how to build relationships with people, because I know what it means to be invisible in some ways, you know. The other thing is that it's made me sensitive to realize what the data doesn't capture. So we should have better data about the way that gay, queer, trans, bi people are targeted and what that means, and the way the system does protect our community and doesn't protect our community. It's made me more sensitive about how we understand what solidarity looks like and doesn't look like. So there are a lot of people who don't like gay people but like me, right? And it's like, that actually isn't a win. That's still homophobia. There are people who have a lot to work on, and it's been interesting to be in the civil rights space, because there are people who are like, Dre, you need to focus on being Black. You need to not focus on being gay. Like, put that aside. Like, we just need to focus on one issue. And how do we remind people that I show up as a whole person every single time, that I don't, like, put one part of me away to go into the meeting? Like, I show up as a whole person. And that's actually what justice means. So I've learned a lot. I've grown a lot, certainly since 2014. And it is, you know, I have a lot more to do. I'm excited about, like, what comes next.
I heard you say that we've seen an historic decrease in crime during the COVID-19 crisis, but no let up in police killing.
Yeah, no let up. So, it's like literally straight. It's like a straight line. We look at the chart, and it's like you put the Washington Post has a chart. It's like you put 2019 up, and you put 2020, and it is like literally same number, same rate, same. Which is wild.
There's also the racial disparities, obviously, in the COVID-19 crisis. I have to say now, you know, Ann and I are a little older, and we participated in a lot of demonstrations, including a lot of Black Lives Matter demonstrations. We're a little nervous about going out into a throng right now. I see most of the people out there are young. I know some older people. Are you concerned about another wave of COVID because so many people are getting out there to gather? Has that been talked about in the groups at all? I mean, Ann and I both fought for the right to First Amendment expression during this crisis if we did it safely. And I see everybody wearing masks. But what's your concern about that?
You know, I'm not a public health expert. I as somebody who had COVID and lost my sense of taste and smell for 5 weeks, I'm sensitive to what the virus does to people, sensitive to the way that it changes people's, the way people move through the world. I am now negative for COVID, but I will tell you that my taste and smell still sort of comes, it's not what it used to be. So I live with it. You know, it's one of those things where I think people are going to be safe out in the streets. You know, I've seen a lot of people with masks. I've seen a lot of people be really thoughtful about how they interact with other people, no hugs, stuff like that. So I think people are safe. And, you know, the system wants us to have to choose how we risk our life one way or the other. And we're like, you know what? I'm going to manage my own risk, right? You want us to stay inside so we don't say anything about the injustices that you're putting in community, and we're not going to do that. But we are going to keep really focused, you know?
I think that's a great way of putting it. I am both heartened by things like New York City bus drivers who refuse to take arrested protesters off to jail, and appalled by police who stand up and say, you know, how dare protesters be mean to us, and how dare they try to take the street when they are killing people on a regular basis. And yet they want the protesters to quiet down and calm down and be, you know, obedient. It seems to me so absolutely blind to the reality of the demands and the situation.
Yeah, you know, it is one of those things that, you know, I'm always shocked at how much of an uphill battle this is, right?
Yeah.
It's like, this is really simple. This is really common sense. So it's interesting. You know, I am hopeful, though. Like, I'm not a pessimist. I am hopeful because my life has shown me that this is, like, a way to do it. That my life has shown me that that standing in the street matters. My life has shown me that that pushing and pressing and fighting will yield the results, and that is really dope.
Well, and your book is about hope.
It is, yeah. It's about this idea that, like, we can do this, right? That, like, present, not permanent, I believe. I also know, like, you know, both of my parents were addicted to drugs, and I grew up in a community of recovery. I've seen people sort of put their lives back together. I've seen communities be whole in a way that they didn't think they could. And, like, that actually gives me a lot of hope, you know?
Well, you were also quite a hero in standing up for the First Amendment in the courts. You were an organizer of a protest at the Baton Rouge Police Department in 2016, and an officer, police officer, says he got hit by an object by somebody in the crowd there, and they never found the person, and they want to prosecute you for this and subject you to all kinds of liability, and yet the Fifth Circuit said, yeah, you're guilty, and then somebody switched their vote. Where does that case stand now?
So we're appealing to the Supreme Court. We are going to find out, you know, the Supreme Court is making decisions about what cases they're going to hear every Monday. So we're waiting, like, every Monday at, like, 9:30, we like, sort of look and right. See if we are on the docket. But we're waiting, you know?
Okay.
A wild case.
Well, and are you finding this life as gratifying as we find protest and independence?
Yeah, you know, I am like a whole lot of things at once. I'm overwhelmed. I'm very busy. I am blessed to be around a set of people that I really do love to work with, and we have amazing relationships. I am not sleeping as much as I want to. I need to call my nephew back, who is 7, who called me last night when I was like delirious and wanted to talk about the protest because he finally sort of gets it, and I felt so bad because I like couldn't string a sentence together. He was like, Uncle Dure, he was so cute. He was like, I want to wear my Black Lives Matter shirt. And I'm like, literally, I like cannot get words out. I'm like, I love you, Isaac. You know, like, so I got to call him back today. So it's just been, a lot. And, you know, I'm proud that we stay focused on the workaround solutions, that we know what solutions are. You know?
Great. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to join us at a time when you are so, busy, let's just put it that way. We really appreciate the work you're doing and that you have always done, and we're certainly on board, and let's keep this going.
And Dure, if you would we'll put it in our email, but if you would just announce a website that people could go to if they want to get connected to your work.
It's the number 8can'twait.org. 8can'twait.org.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
That's why I couldn't find it earlier. I was looking for 8won'twait.org.
8can'twait.
Okay. Got it. Thank you
very much. Eat, sleep, call your nephew. Okay. Thanks to Dure for joining us today. He's doing heroic work.
And let's talk about, you know, what else happened at some of these demonstrations. Rise and Resist was out there. They were in Union Square on Tuesday. Can we put up that picture, Rich, of Rise and Resist?
Yeah.
Take your knee off his neck. And there's our friends from Rise and Resist. I see Jay Walker, Robert Greenquist, others. Yes. Right there in Union Square, where a lot of the action was happening in New York.
Well, a lot of the action last night was happening around from Union Square over to Fifth Avenue and 14th Street, where demonstrators were there and decided in a confrontation with the police to perform civil disobedience. And so they stood quietly, not resisting arrest or anything, but just being willing to be arrested. But the cops got angry and they started attacking the protesters who were not offering any resistance. And our friend Jason Rosenberg, who's a member of Reclaim Pride and ACT UP, got pummeled by the cops, beating him with a baton and breaking his arm. And that's Jason. And he asked for medical help and they refused. They wouldn't take him to the hospital. They wouldn't call an EMT. They wouldn't do anything to help him. They took him to jail. And when he finally got out of jail, his roommate had to take him to the hospital because he was in bad shape, as you can see, and the cops would absolutely do nothing to help him.
All kinds of stitches in his head. It's just a horrendous beating that he took.
Exactly.
Gratuitous. I mean, as the whole George Floyd thing is, which is why people are so outraged. A guy allegedly, tries to pass a phony $20 bill, allegedly, and gets beaten up and killed for it. I mean, with Eric Garner, it was peddling cigarettes on the streets of Staten Island. How about just writing a ticket and moving on?
What has happened to those cops? One of them got fired, I think, in the Eric Garner case. It's just outrageous.
And that was her Herculean effort to get him fired.
5 years to get him fired.
Right. And then our friend Keith Boykin. Now, you see him on CNN all the time as a commentator, African-American gay man. He was out there, and he was arrested and detained for 6 hours during a New York City protest.
This is not a picture of Keith under arrest. This is an earlier picture of Keith.
Oh, yes, right. And he was just trying to take videos and told them he was pressed. He said there is no physical distancing in the jail. They bruised his hands with the zip ties, his wrists. Never charged with a felony, given a summons. No warning. Not allowed to make a call while in prison. I mean, this is the whole criminal justice system. It's the whole, criminalization system.
It's preemptive punishment. And that is what the New York Police Department has been doing for God knows how many years. It's certainly what they did to us 30 years ago in ACT UP. They haul you in. They injure you by putting these plastic wrist ties much too tight. Your hands start turning blue. They throw you in a cell. They keep you for 6 hours or 27 hours or whatever before they finally let you go. They are abusing you all the time, calling you names. They give you rotten bologna to eat as one meal in 27 hours. And their idea is to assault you and punish you before you've ever been adjudicated in a court.
Well, not that there's not an ancient history of all that, but a lot of that was stepped up under Giuliani, who really wanted to punish people who just got arrested for very small things, especially people of color.
Yeah.
Now, maybe we should talk a little bit about, all the stuff that Trump did this week, can we?
Sure.
I mean, by the way, did you see his NSA chief, the new guy, Robert O'Brien, go out on the White House lawn and say, oh, the cops are all great, 99.99% are not racist? He is from Southern California, but he used a Rotary Club scholarship when he was a kid to attend Orange Free State University in apartheid South Africa. That's where he chose to go to school, in a racially segregated university in South Africa.
Well, this is what drives me crazy, that all this stuff goes on, never gets stopped, never gets condemned, never gets punished, and yet a guy tries to sell loose cigarettes on a sidewalk in Staten Island, and he's killed.
Well, look what's happening in New York. I mean, I think the police just have too much. Look, obviously they've been very busy lately. They haven't been able to protect us in Chelsea lately, where there's been a lot of robberies. But police funding, the mayor, he wants a 1% reduction in police funding, 30% reduction in youth services. This cannot stand. We need a way, you know, we put up a lot of funds for the police, actually under Dinkins, when things were pretty hot around here. And we don't need this many police. We have 36,000 of them.
Yes, and as DeRay would tell you, and as I've been hearing for days now, the police involvement in actual violent crimes, that's about 10% of their work. Everything else is property or these small things that don't really require policing and that should be handed over, and again, I'm quoting DeRay, to experts in other fields that should actually be handling these issues, not the police.
We need to turn it into peacekeeping. The police department, by the way, says they are at least investigating Amy Cooper in the Chris Cooper Park case. And the DA says they're investigating. That's kind of weak. They're not really. But, you know, it has come out about this Amy Cooper that she made false charges against somebody she was trying to date. So she has a record on this. Chris was on The View, by the way. He was very good with his sister, Melody.
Yeah, but better with us, of course. Update, Chris says he's doing fine, and he is very moved by the support he's been getting from most people, and he's ignoring the bad stuff. So we're happy he's okay.
Well, you know, the Attorney General has behaved so abominably, of course, since he got in office. But Jerry Nadler says he can't get Barr to appear at the Judiciary Committee. So he's introducing legislation to slash the Justice Department budget for his office, for Barr's office, by $50 million. They're going to hear from whistleblowers and former officials in the Flynn case and other things.
Sounds like a drop in the bucket. I'd defund him completely and find a way to fire him.
Right.
Whatever. They're only replaced by worse people.
By the way, normally we would start a show on June 3rd by saying a happy Pride Month. And we're not really kind of in the mood for it. But neither are Trump and Pence. Absolutely no recognition of Pride Month.
But we're proud of the out lesbian Episcopal bishop, Marion Buddy, who spoke such truth.
You saw she's a lesbian?
Yeah.
I read that she had. All right. I mean,
I stand ready to be corrected if that is wrong, but that is my understanding.
That was my initial take, just based on
Only did she blast Trump for his exploitative photo op in front of her church, but then he went to the Catholic Services organization, and Wilton Gregory ended up blasting him all over again.
Wilton Gregory was the head of the Catholic bishops when they had in 1996. When they had the crisis, the crisis came to a head over abuse by priests. And he was pretty aggressive about wanting to lock up bishops who didn't report these things at that conference in Dallas.
Well, this gives me an opening to report my favorite story of the week, just as an aside. In Detroit, Michigan, the Catholic Archdiocese has ordered the eviction of a group called Fortunate Families, which is a pro-LGBT group that had been meeting in one of the churches there. He said it has a competing vision, which is detrimental to the very membership of the organization it seeks to serve. He hopes that people will find support for growing as a human person in the virtue of Christ-like chastity.
It's so very
kicking a pro-gay group out of the church again.
It's very hard for all those self-hating homosexual men who run the church to deal with this. And that's the reason.
And the other Trump administration thing this week was the Department of Education, Betsy DeVos, sticking its nose into the Connecticut case about high school and college trans athletes. The Department of Education wrote a letter to the court saying that schools allowing trans women athletes, are violating Title IX's rule against sex discrimination by discriminating against cisgender women. It's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Again, I will repeat it again. Are they saying, well, of course, actually, they're talking about now having separate sports for all trans athletes. That's what they want. Oh, I mean, because they don't want the trans boys to play against the girls. But under their definition of sex, birth sex, that's what it would be. So, you know.
If they would just let people be people, they would have a lot less to do.
Well, the Civil Rights Division of the Education Department is run by a bigot. By the way, it was the mayor of Danbury, the Republican mayor, who said, I'm just going to have separate sports for trans people there. The Supreme Court, in a rare moment of lucidity, upheld the California rules barring church services, and Roberts voted with the liberals. But the dissents were rather alarming. I just raised this case because we're waiting for the big cases on transgender rights and gay rights that are coming down within the next couple of weeks. Brace yourselves.
Yeah.
Because your only hope is Neil Gorsuch.
Well, it could be Roberts. It could be, what's his name? The Kavanaugh. You never know. Or it could be none of them.
Well, Gorsuch, you would have to hope Gorsuch made a deal with Kennedy, who wrote our pro-gay decisions. But we don't know.
Oh, so I don't think
either way, we have to work for equal justice.
He didn't make any deal with Kennedy. There is no deal with Kennedy about gay stuff, please. So let's get back to violence against Black yes. LGBT people. In Tallahassee, Florida, we made reference to this, transmasculine Tony McDade was shot dead by cops. There were stories. First, the cops said, well, Tony was armed, but witnesses there said, no, he was not armed. Then they said they were coming after him because he had stabbed someone. But they got out of their car shooting. They didn't say, hold it, we're putting you under arrest. They didn't do anything like that. They just got out of their car shooting and shot him dead.
Well, the prelude to this is that he posted a video where he said he was out for revenge against a guy named Malik Jackson, 21, and he was going to F him up. And he actually said this on the video, because I don't want to be here on Earth with the government, this government. I mean, he said that. So the suggestion is, was he trying to commit suicide by cop by showing a weapon? But the people who were witnesses to this said they didn't hear any warnings of him, and they just started shooting. So we don't know. The officer has – under Florida law, the officer who killed him, we can't know his name. Okay. And but though he is on
privacy rights. And all in right. Alexandria, Louisiana, McKinsley Lakeith Lincoln, gay man who'd been harassed a lot, was shot dead, I think not by the police, but again, another killing.
Well, the issue there was the family reported him missing on May 15th. The police found him later that day and didn't call the family. They had to learn from news reports that he was dead, that he was found dead. They say it's being investigated and maybe as a hate crime, but they don't know. By the way, did you read what's happening with New Sean Williams?
Yes.
Famous HIV. Go ahead.
Well, it's a HIV positive black man, straight, or at least having sex with a lot of women. He was convicted years ago of transmitting HIV or having unprotected sex. He was convicted. He made a deal. He made a plea deal. And went to prison, and now his sentence ended 10 years ago, but he's still in prison because there's a law in New York that says you can keep people after the end of their sentence if you think they're a threat to the population.
Well, the deal was made by Attorney General Andrew Cuomo, and yeah. Now it's being the civil confinement is being enforced by Attorney General Tish James. So let's get some pressure going here and see what's going on. All right.
That would be nice. All right. Well, we are not we are not so sad to lose Lou Sheldon at age 85, head of the Traditional Values Coalition, who was after us for decades. He regularly called us predators, said we were out to kidnap children and turn them gay.
We got to start with Anita Bryant in 1977 with the Save Our Children campaign in Miami, where they overturned the gay rights law there. And he worked to overturn other gay rights laws. So he was on a roll in those days. He portrayed us as godless sluts who want to cross-dress and rape children.
He was
a Muslim,
a protege of Pat Robertson, and he was very, very close to top politicians in Washington. He was not considered an outlier. He was considered a part of the power elite. He was close to Newt Gingrich and Trent Lott and George W. Bush. He was anti-marriage, anti-same-sex marriage, anti-abortion, anti-Muslim, anti-trans. He was part of the whole Jack Abramoff scandal. He'd been paid by Abramoff to oppose the anti-gambling law. And he was the creator of the video, Gay Rights, Special Rights, Inside the Homosexual Agenda, which was a very popular propaganda tool for a while.
Well, he's dead. By the way, give Pat Robertson a little credit this week. He stood up to the president and said, "What you're doing, Mr. President, is not cool." That's talking to the governors that way and invoking the military and Pat Robertson. And there were two Republican senators this week, Tim Scott and Ben Sasse, who, you remember, there's been no breaking of ranks by the Republicans at all. I'd like to see some votes and stop some of these judges. By the way, I see Chuck Schumer on the news holding up a big report. Oh, how terrible the judges are. What are you going to do about it, Chuck? That's what I want to know.
Well, what can he do about it? Tell us.
Well, I mean, here's what you do. And I say this to all the groups who send me the press releases about this. You organize in those states pressure campaigns on the possible votes that you could get. In Maine, like in Colorado, people who are feeling pressure about this, about the election. That's what you have to do in the short run. Of course, in the long run, you've got to get back the Senate.
Yes, which I think we're getting closer and closer to by the minute if this keeps up. But it's still 5 months away. So anything can happen in 5 months, as we know. We'd never even heard of COVID 5 months ago.
Let's pay tribute to Ron Simmons.
Okay.
Ron was the beloved D.C.-based AIDS educator and activist. He died at the age of 70 after a long battle with prostate cancer. For the last quarter of a century, he distinguished himself through transformative work at a group called Us Helping Us, People Into Living Incorporated, dedicated to the well-being of Black gay men and fighting HIV/AIDS in the entire Black community. He was the president and CEO of that group until 2016. He was honored by President Obama as a champion for change. He was known for his wit, but also for his commitment. He edited his 1972 yearbook at SUNY Albany. Did you read this about him? And he put in stuff against the Vietnam War and for gays. And he was condemned by the New York State Senate on the floor. They passed a resolution. And he collaborated with Marlon Riggs on Tongues Untied, assistant professor at Howard. But, you know, once he was diagnosed, he moved into AIDS work. And he raised $30 million across his tenure for that organization. So it was the first Black gay organization to own its own building, develop prevention strategies that we use to this day, including in barbershops, which are, of course, the temples in the community in many respects. He said, "The main problem for Black gay men is not HIV. It's that we're trapped in a racist, homophobic, capitalist society." He was a giant in the HIV movement. And there's going to be a virtual celebration of his life planned for June 7th, Sunday. They haven't given me the link yet, but if we find it before we send out the email, we will.
Ron Simmons, you can also look online for that through the week and maybe find it. And friends and activists said goodbye to Larry Kramer at a memorial gathering at the New York City AIDS Memorial last week. Not socially distanced enough.
It was not. It made me nervous. I mean, people were wearing masks, but then people would come up and tap me on the shoulder, and I'd like, take it easy. I'm 66. But I mean, of course, you see with all the demonstrations this week, people are shoulder to shoulder, you know.
They are, but I take what DeRay said seriously, which is some freedom of choice. You know, people, we should not be repressed and silenced by fear mongering either.
Well, at least Mayor de Blasio didn't call them idiots like he called us when we tried to have a press conference, right?
No.
By the way, speaking of Larry, Ryan Murphy plans to run The Normal Heart and Larry's The Destiny of Me in repertory on Broadway. He bought the rights to the plays. I have to say that probably had something to do with Larry needing a little help in the home stretch there. So God knows when they're going to be able to do it, though.
But they're both terrific plays, and if you can't see them right, I guess you can see the HBO version of The Normal Heart on their on-demand schedule, but The Destiny of Me is also wonderful. And read them. Read them. They're great plays to read.
Indeed. Some news from the States. The bigoted representative in Iowa, Steve King, a racist dog, lost his Republican primary to another very conservative person that the Republican establishment got behind because they didn't want to lose the seat to a Democrat.
Yeah. So unfortunately, we will probably get that very conservative representative. In Utah, Equality Utah, the LGBT statewide group, held a candidates forum, and all four Republican gubernatorial candidates showed up to address the crowd. Now, it's everyone from a really bizarro right-wing candidate to John Huntsman, who I guess would be the most lefty of the candidates. But they were all there. They all promised to help the community. That's got to be some kind of type.
Well, they've got the only U.S. senator, really, who does stand up to Trump, and that's Mitt Romney.
Yeah, although not yesterday. He was part of that parade of people that Casey Hunt made a video about of them all walking past her, the Republican senators, and she'd say, do you think President Trump's actions yesterday were appropriate or were an abuse of power? And even Mitt Romney said, I don't know enough about it, and walked by.
That's too bad. In Indiana, out lesbian Pat Hackett won the Democratic primary in Congressional District 2 to face the anti-LGBT Republican Trump lackey Jackie Walorski. That's what her name is.
Okay. In Arizona,
campaign.
in Arizona, a federal district court ruled that the Social Security Administration cannot deny survivors' benefits to same-sex couples where one died after they were married but less than 9 months after the marriage, which is the general Social Security standard. They're trying to prevent people from marrying just to get benefits when right. Someone's about to die, so they have this nine-month window. Well, they had couples who had been together for 43 years and 40 years, and the court said, don't be ridiculous. You cannot hold them to this standard. They were not allowed to be married.
It's a great win. I read that it was a class action brought by Lambda. I read that it's going to affect about 40 couples, at least in Arizona, maybe, but others elsewhere.
Of course, the Department of Justice can still appeal this because this is just a district court level decision, and they can take it up to the appeals court and the Supreme Court. So don't expect any benefits immediately.
How about that Brian Sims in Pennsylvania? He's a state representative there.
What a guy.
You know, it was revealed that one of his colleagues from the Republican Party was coming to class with COVID and not telling people. So he ranted and raved about this really powerfully. And then when he stood up on the floor to give a speech about it, Republican Jerry Knowles shouted across the hall that he was a little girl. And Sims wrote that Knowles is in a party afraid of women.
And part of Sims' anger was, he said, I donated a kidney.
Well, no, good for him. He doesn't hold back.
All the Democrats in the Pennsylvania legislature are pissed off about this. The Republicans withheld this information, kept it secret, and didn't tell any of their Democratic colleagues. And, it's outrageous. So in Michigan, the LGBT group Fair and Equal Michigan is trying to get the state to vote on a non-discrimination provision for sexual orientation and gender identity. But in the midst of the COVID crisis, they were not able to collect the requisite number of signatures. So they are now suing the state to have those standards put aside for this emergency situation.
Right. In Idaho, a federal court has warned the state that the injunction that they issued bars them from blocking trans people from correcting their birth certificates. So stop it. And a new Gallup poll, new high, 67% of the United States now says same-sex marriage should be recognized as legal. Well, you all better recognize it as legal because
it is. The Williams Institute in L.A. says that since the 2015 marriage decision in the Supreme Court, 300,000 same-sex couples have married, adding $3.8 billion to the economy and supporting 45,000 jobs.
Wow.
Well, that's good.
Any more domestic news?
Nothing mandatory. So let's move on to international news because we don't have a lot of time left. Congratulations to Dr. Francisco Jose Alexander of Madrid, Spain, had the COVID virus recovered and was named Mr. Gay World Pride. He'd been the runner-up last year, and then the contest was canceled this year, so they made him the winner for this year.
Same-sex marriages did get underway in Costa Rica, and 82 couples have filed to marry. We have a picture of the first couple, a lesbian couple, who did it at 12:01 a.m.
Those 82 couples have married. They've applied to have their marriages recognized.
Right.
They've been married all over the place.
Okay. In Malaysia, a man was given the go-ahead to challenge the Islamic ban on gay sex, sex against the order of nature. A suit was filed in 2018. The argument's going to be heard there by the end of the year.
Mark your calendars. On June 30th, HBO will air David France's highly acclaimed new film, Welcome to Chechnya, about the pogrom against LGBT people in Chechnya. It's supposed to be quite horrifying.
Sadly, the strong man who runs the country, Ramzan Kadyrov, may not be able to see it. He's in the hospital with COVID, according to sources.
Exactly. In Zambia, the president has pardoned 3,000 people for Africa Freedom Day, including a gay couple who had been sentenced to 15 years for sodomy. This is the couple that were the subject of the ex-U.S. ambassador complaints. He got withdrawn by Trump, but now the couple has evidently been pardoned.
All right. A breakthrough in France. They have their first transgender mayor, Marie Cao, CAU, of Thioy-les-Marchiennes. She's 55. Her colleagues on the council elected her with nearly unanimously.
And in England, in Lambeth Borough, a part of London, Philip Normal, love that name. Actually, he adopted that name. Philip Normal is the first British mayor who is HIV positive. He's 38 years old. He's an artist and fashion designer. And evidently, Andy, you can confirm this. It is the gayest borough in London.
Well, it is where the Archbishop of Canterbury lives. That's where Lambeth Palace is.
There we go.
I would say Camden is the gayest borough. But anyway, he gave a quote. He said, no one should be obliged to reveal their status, because he is open about his HIV. He says, but the response he's gotten has been brilliant. Also to his being gay as well.
Yes.
He's an artist and designer.
In Baja California, the peninsula south of California that is part of Mexico, HIV positive people can now marry. How progressive.
In Poland, Poland, the gay mayor of Warsaw, Rafał Sarkowski, has emerged as the leading challenger to the conservative president, Duda, who was favored. Rafał is running on a pro-EU platform, he's made the race a lot closer. And of course, he promises a huge wave of change.
Well, we need change because IKEA fired a worker there who objected to a pro-gay event that the company was holding. And the Warsaw prosecutor is now charging the company with anti-religious discrimination.
Okay.
In Canada, Calgary has banned conversion therapy for minors. And in China, there is a new civil code that may protect same-sex couples' property rights. We'll recognize them enough to do that, but they still haven't legalized same-sex marriage. And as they take over Hong Kong and take it backwards, Jimmy Sham, a gay man in Hong Kong, is asking a court to recognize his marriage in New York, but China is cracking down. So,
Britain announced that they're, because it was a former colony, they're ready to take in 3 million people from Hong Kong. And then Pompeo came out and said pretty much the same thing, that we're willing to open up the doors to all these people out of Hong Kong and drain it. And you won't have it anymore, China.
Anything the U.S. government can do to tweak China at the moment, I guess, is the new policy.
But allowing immigration? Shocking.
Very shocking. Will they all be in quarantine for months before they're allowed in?
I don't know.
Either do I.
Most of our virus here in New York came from Europe.
Yeah. All right. And in England, we're mourning the death of Phil May at 75. He was the lead singer of a band called Pretty Things. He died of complications of hip surgery.
After a bicycle accident.
Yeah. He came out as bisexual and said his androgyny provoked fistfights. The Ramones issued a statement saying he was their biggest influence, or his band was, and invented garage bands.
He also inspired Bowie and Nirvana.
He once set fire to a plane.
Well,
he had two kids, and he leaves his partner, Colin Graham.
Yeah, he did have a male partner at his death.
Yeah.
Tell us about Just Sam.
Well, let's do AIDS news first. I do have a story there. The AIDS Law Project of Pennsylvania is suing the Gilead Pharmaceutical Company in a class action suit, saying that they have violated the privacy of their customers by sending the mailings that are clearly labeled Gilead and putting the customers' names on these envelopes and HIV prevention team. So people are a little upset that they've been outed by Gilead in the U.S. mail.
Right.
Now I did want to just follow up on the American Idol winner, Just Sam. She's the first out winner. There have been some out contestants, most prominently people like Adam Lambert, but she is the first one to actually win. And I like this quote from her. About being a lesbian. I like what I like, and that's just that, you know? And it's not men, like, at all.
I did look up Bishop Buddy, by the way, here on my computer
screen. Am I wrong?
She does. Maybe I shouldn't be stereotyping. I thought she was lesbian, too. But her husband, his name is Paul.
All right, so I take it back.
You know what? There's nothing wrong with it.
I was going to say, better luck next time, Bishop Buddy.
any entertainment news?
Pixar, which is a division of Disney, has put out a short film called Out. It is the first Pixar film with a gay lead, so everybody seems very excited about that. And I wanted to just mention Christo, who died this week, just because I loved his work. He was a wonderful conceptual artist, but what I really liked about him is that he was a grassroots activist. he was someone who had to go to city councils and community meetings for years to get these projects approved.
Well, I mean, like 40 years ago, he was rejected by New York City, who weren't gonna stand for putting the what he called the gates, these orange cloths throughout the park. I mean, neighborhood activism was a lot more powerful in those days, and they stopped him. But then he, you know, comes in. Bloomberg is mayor. Bloomberg says, "Come right in."
Well, because he appreciated art, but Christo left the park pristine and left, I think, $1 million contribution to the park. So I just appreciated the extent to which he turned all of that into part of the art project and really engaged with the local communities in getting his work done.
And well, he did amazing things all over the world.
I liked his wrapping the islands in Biscayne Bay with the pink material around the little islands.
He wrapped up the Reichstag.
Yes, that was amazing.
He kind of redeemed it in a way.
Yeah. I wouldn't say he redeemed it. I would say he pointed it out as a major problem or whatever.
Right. Well, okay.
I also wanted to mention someone else who died recently, a guy named Herman Carrillo, died at 59, gay, novelist, teacher, chair of the literary Penn Faulkner Foundation. His surviving partner called him a hard guy to know. Now, why was he a hard guy to know? Because he was not, as he claimed, a Cuban emigre. He was, in fact, Herman Carroll from Detroit. And his husband of 5 years did not know that he was actually Herman Carroll from Detroit. And only after he died and his death was reported as Herman Carrillo, that his family, I think his sister, came forward and said, "Wait a minute."
Oh, well, you know, Tony Curtis was Bertie Schwartz. congratulations to our friends over there at the web series After Forever. They got 6 Daytime Emmy nominations, Best Actor for Kevin Spiritus, one of the creators, also for Actress and Drama.
And congratulations to our friends at RUSA LGBT. They held their 4th annual Brighton Beach Pride event, but online this year because they didn't want people crowding on the boardwalk. But they have been very active during the corona crisis. They say they've helped over 150 people and donated more than $13,000 to undocumented Russian-speaking LGBT people.
So there is hope. We're down to our last 30 seconds. This has been a hellacious week, and I'm a white guy, but a hellacious week. And, you know, but it was nice to have DeRay offering some hope, and we hope we can overcome these circumstances. This show has helped me.
Well, I keep describing myself as both inspired and terrified.
10 seconds. Well, good to be with you, Ann. Nice to see you.
And you, Andy. See you soon, and the rest of you, too.
Bye-bye.